sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobia, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends, though the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, hey, hey. 2021.
Hey, shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up!
Shut up!
You cannot talk!
Episode 122. Asked for better cards. Check this out. Death before dishonor. And I'll tell you what else. I tighten my belt for I beg for help. Foolish pride is what held me together through the years. I wasn't felt, which is why I ain't never played myself. I just play the hands I'm dealt. I can't say I've never knelt before God and asked for better cards.
Message!
At times to no avail. But I never sat back feeling sorry for myself. If you don't give me heaven, I'll raise hell till it's heaven. You know what?
Message!
All right, welcome et bienvenue à un autre épisode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, Beat Black, a.k.a. Beat Blizzard, a.k.a. Beat Black, a.k.a. Mr. Shut Up Podcast.com, and a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, let me get this thing out the way. You can't tell, but I got two screens and it's a little distracting. All right, the intro, I'm not done. Hey, before I start the show, I want to welcome you new listeners and welcome back old listeners or returning listeners. But to you new listeners, I need to give you a heads up that this podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green and waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Who's your blood's up in this bitch? That means this podcast, there's no place for your white sensitivity, white fragility on this podcast. It will not be tolerated. I represent and hold it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. Today's date is October 29, 2023, and this episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory. Finally, this episode is also brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label as a motherfucking crew, and if you want to be done with Whitey, then fuck you too. Excuse me. Oh, whoa. Okay. Wow. What a, what is it? 7:53 p.m. on the Sabbath day? It's a little late. I'm going to record this podcast, publish it, and then get high. And you know what? Before I, continue with this intro. Well, okay, here, just help you new listeners get situated. On this podcast, we had a whole lot of superstars. No, okay. On this podcast, I break it down into three parts or acts, if you will. Pretend like this is a show, and we have three acts. The first one is the introduction. Second one is news and random thoughts, and last one is final thoughts. In the introduction, I like to do shit like, play the theme, introduce the title, spit out some rap verse or some poetry. I prefer to call it poetry, which usually ties into final thoughts. And, break down the kind of podcast it is, warn white people that, if you're sensitive about your whiteness, this ain't the podcast for you. Why do I feel the need to do that? I think it's because I grew up in Canada, surrounded by white people, and I'm trying to break out of this habit of prioritizing white people's comfort over my own. But that's a longer story. All right, and another thing I like to do with your introduction is break down, remember some dates relevant to this week, for example, and RIP to Richard Roundtree. And if you don't know who Richard Roundtree, sorry, I'm not being laugh. Richard Roundtree, you probably know him as Shaft. Shaft. I think he also was in, Three the Hard Way? Hold on, let me read his filmography. Shaft, Shaft in Africa. Was he in Three the Hard Way? Crack House, Bad Jim. Oh, I guess that wasn't. I guess I got him mixed up with the other colored guy. Boat Trip. What Men Want. Okay, that wasn't him? Okay, well, wrong black guy. All right, whatever. But anyway, yeah, you know him as Shaft. Legendary. So RIP to him. He passed away on... he was born July 9th, 1942, and he passed away October 24th, 2023. Age of 81. Another date to remember is Crush Groove, Body Moving. Yeah, Crush Groove came out on October 25th, 1985. Jesus Christ. I was 10 around then. I was 10 during then. And released in theaters. Okay, I'm not that old. I'm old enough to have seen it on VHS tape. I'm trying to remember whether I got it off one of my white friends or I don't know, but I remember pressing play and that shit changed my life. Well, actually Beat Street did, but that's another, yeah, but great movie. It was a great movie. I mean, maybe not by today's standards, but yeah, great movie. That's all you need to know. And last thing I like to do during the intro is share some quote. That I found online, and this quote goes, first, shout out to my man Talal Basi. It popped up in my feed. You know, for the most part, most of the quotes that I get come from Talal Basi. No, that's not true. Most true, but he just likes to share thoughts. And this one goes, shout out to people whose kindness isn't a strategy, but a way of life. Oh, man, that's beautiful. Yes. Yes, I hate fake smiles, man. I like authentic smiles. But anyway, that's another story. Okay. All right. So I think that's it. Let's just jump to news and random thoughts. And yeah, keep the show going, all right? All right. Y'all ready? Y'all ready? All right. People on the left, make some noise. People on the right, make some noise. Sorry. This is me pretending like I just warmed up the cloud. All right, let's get this motherfucker show going. All right, let's go. All right. Okay. All right. Okay. What's up? Okay. All right. Okay. So I'm going to play this interesting clip, TikTok clip, right? And I'm going to let him explain it to you and then share a quick thought about this one. But here we go.
$5,000 is what I was just offered to pledge my support to Israel. This Zionist organization emailed me this morning and they said, "We have been following your content on TikTok and appreciate your passion for the Middle East. Our organization, which seeks to help understanding, would like to offer you a sponsorship opportunity. We have noticed your support for the Palestinian cause and we respect your dedication to important issues. However, we believe that there may be some misunderstandings and misperceptions regarding Israel and you have fallen for the lies of the rabid dogs." What the fuck? "We are willing to offer you $5,000 to go live and pledge your support for Israel. We aim to provide you with resources and experts who can make you see the truth. Your voice is influential, and we believe it's essential to not spread the lies of terrorists on accident. We look forward to working together to promote greater truth in the world." This is horrible.
Horrible.
I've seen other creators talk about how they've been offered money to support Israel, and I think this is absolutely disgusting. "I will not sell on Palestinians for any amount of money. You cannot buy my support of a genocide. This is disgusting." Oh, and calling them rabid dogs and terrorists, like, How much racism do they think they can get away with? And I'll just be like, oh, that's normal, right? Free Palestine.
Damn. Sorry, that bump was loud. Yeah, man. I mean, respect to the homie. I'm going to look him up on TikTok because I'm making a point here. Is this him? Your favorite guy? Nope. Hold on a second. At your favorite guy. Okay. And oh my God, 2.9 million followers. Right. I wonder if that sponsorship is proportionate to how many listeners or how many followers you have. Because I don't have the numbers, but I'm sure that I'm not at 2.9 million. 2.9. I'll be surprised if I'm at 2. But that's not the point. My point is, now, it's not that yes, pro-Palestine. Pro-Palestine views, but not the way the Zionists make me out to be. Like, it's not that I want the misfortune of Israel. What I do want is not to be fucking standing by while genocide happens, you know? Like, it's one thing to read about a genocide in the history books. It's fucking torture to hear about it in current events. It's driving me nuts. Now, I shared this clip because $5,000. $5,000. How much is my soul worth? Okay. First, the joke was going to be how, you know, hey, dear Zionist, how about you make me that offer? But I have to warn you that I ain't got 2.9 million listeners. like, if they're paying people to change their opinions. But who am I kidding? No, but $5,000 is not going to erase the torture. It's not going to put a Band-Aid on... We all have a price. Okay, no, this is me trying to be serious here. Seriously, reading the fucking news in Palestine is just torture. It's fucking torture. Israel is on a war path, and they don't give a fuck. I say they. I mean, as in the folks in charge, the assholes in charge, don't give a fuck. It's just sheer... it's just sheer fuck them other niggas. I'm down for my niggas. It's them versus us. It's like sheer barbar. Look, man, war has got to be the most primitive discovery human beings have made. Anyways, these assholes are on a path to genocide, and the rest of us are standing. You know what makes it? No, it's not the fact that I'm just standing by. Is that the people who run this country or like, no, there ain't nothing to see here. They tell us it's justified, then it is justified. That's what makes it worse. It's genocide, and then later we're gonna have celebrations about, we regret killing all those Native Americans. Oh, that was awful, man. If we could take it back, we would take it back. No, you wouldn't. No, you fucking would. And whatever. Anyways, all right, yeah. Initially, this was gonna be a joke about how I would take that $5,000, but with one listener. I don't have a responsibility to my audience at this point. But then, as I just, the time between me finding this clip and wanting to joke about taking the money, and this episode, I have seen too many shit go on in Palestine to be like, yeah, to make that joke. It's heart-wrenching. And to make shit worse, these guys are preparing for a ground invasion. Oh, it's not just a ground invasion. It's the fact that they zero silence. Like, they made sure that Palestinians can't broadcast, can't show some of the atrocities being committed. It's man, Israel is on this. The Israeli military, the IDF, these guys are on, now we ain't asking for permission. And yeah, sure. We're not asking for permission. We're just going to let our future generation beg for forgiveness. Kind of like what the Nazis did. And whatever. All right. Okay. It's heart-wrenching, man. All right. Well, good for the your favorite guy for not taking that money and exposing these folks. And good for everyone else who's... you know you're on the wrong side when you're trying to pay people to adopt your opinion. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, and all right, okay. I've said enough. What else I got? Okay, so this is probably on a lighter side. I am going to play a clip.
Unless problem with oh, here we go. Freedom is that more often than not.
Hold on a second. Let me try to introduce the clip before I play it. All right, you may not recognize the voice, but it in the show notes, this is labeled as "When we have a coup in the Middle East, it works." And the person speaking is a comedian. It's comedian Bassem Youssef, and I guess he's commenting on. Here, I'll just read the caption. It says, "Throwback to when comedian and friend Bassem Youssef." Oh, this okay. Sorry, the problem. I guess this is Jon Stewart's show. Okay, so Jon Stewart. The caption reads, "Throwback to when comedian and friend Bassem Youssef." Gave us his take on January 6th and the backslide of democracy during our freedom episode. Here he goes. Oh, play.
Problem with freedom is that more often than not, people who call for freedom, they actually call for a tailor-made version that actually works for them with a total disregard of other people's freedom. You had an election and people kind of like didn't accept it and went and wanted to take things in their own hand. But the what happened in January 6th, I mean, the worst thing that happened on there is the comparisons. Like people like the pundit on the news were saying, mm-hmm. Oh my God, this looks like a coup from the Middle East. And this kind of hurt my feeling because, you know, no, seriously. No, like, you know, like, first of all, when we have a coup in the Middle East, it works. You guys suck. You guys.
We're new. This is new.
We're
trying.
Keep to what you do best, toppling democracy in the other countries. But, like,
when
you come to your country, you suck.
Message.
Seriously, man. So if January 6th was a failure, what was the opening date? Fuck the convoy. Oh, man, don't get me started on the convoy. These motherfuckers really convinced themselves that they were freedom fighters. Maybe, you know what? White people illusion, man. All right, okay. We got one chuckle out from News and Random Thoughts. Yeah, you know what? I just realized what episode is this. Yeah, we are strict talking about Palestine. Well, I guess in this case, we're not talking about Palestine, but politics. All right, okay. What's the next one I got? Yes. I go, you know, I'm going to play this one here. It goes, okay, here, I'll play it right now. Sorry, a little lost on my notes. Is this it? Okay, nope, this is not it. Okay, all right. Title goes, "A System Made by Killers. Time for a system made by empathizers." Okay, here we go.
What is your most radical?
In the West, we live in a culture that is created by people who got to where they are and colonized the world, not because they are more technologically advanced or better at anything, but just because they're the best at killing. So our society is structured by people who were the best at killing, who channeled all of their technological advancements into killing and subjugating a lot of people. Something that got me really angry the other day is thinking about how something that was like leveled towards me as a slur when I was growing up is that my ancestors in Africa lived in mud huts. Yeah, bitch, because it was the most technologically efficient way to keep cool. And you're using the materials around you and it's incredibly sustainable and in balance with nature. That is technological advancement. You're telling me that all the convenience we have today at the expense of the planet is advanced? That's regressive. Mm. It's because this culture is the best at killing and now they're killing the planet.
Damn, that was loud. I hope that did not hurt your ears. Right. The reason why this clip got my attention is because I like this idea of... See, initially, there was a period of time I spent the majority of my life believing that... Recently, I went into this depression and started to believe that people like me who feel empathy, people like me are too sensitive to live in this world. And now I'm starting to think that people like me need to run this world. Now, I don't mean that in a takeover, like turning myself into another tyrant. But I'm saying, if there's one thing I resent about the what's going on with Israel and the way Israel is handling their situation, as you can tell, it's a bunch of, the folks in charge are a bunch of fucking sociopaths. Bunch of, they love, what's that, they, what's, I spoke a butt in the back, guess I travel the pack, can't wait for niggas to set trip because I love to scrap. It's like, think of the people who join law enforcement. There's always in that group, there's one person, it's not about the badge. It's about being able to crack someone's skull. I think about how Columbus, how we used to honor him as a hero. And all he did, and what he did is, sure, he discovered America for Europe, a new continent for Europe, but he was a piece of shit about it, man. He saw kindness and change it into weakness. He turned folks who embraced him, invited him. He said, look at these soft motherfuckers. And he enslaved these people. He tortured them. He became their worst nightmare. And we honored that. Like, another way to think about it, right? This is a reason why some of us are scared of an alien race discovering us. Because if they're advanced and they have Columbus's mentality, we're fucked. We are so fucked. Picture being flown across the universe to be someone's slave. Holy shit. It's some alien slave shit. Oh, it's going to suck. Anyway, that's not my point. My point is, we started out as a primitive species. We still are a primitive species. And we handle our conflict using war. Like, to a sociopath, to a bunch of killers, I can imagine how war is like, great, best idea. I'm going to send a whole bunch of other people's kids to fight other people's kids. And the winner gets to decide, okay, hey, from now on, your piece of property belongs to me. Now, I'm a dreamer. I know I'm a dreamer. I know I'm being a dreamer, but I'm trying to imagine a future where human beings, our default setting is when it comes to a conflict, we both aim for a win-win solution, an outcome. We imagine a world where we have fuck. I know I sound corny right now. I know I'm dreaming, but maybe that's my purpose, to plant the seed. But imagine a world. Imagine peace in the Middle East. But peace where the other side doesn't get wiped out. Peace where it's like, hey, what if you get, that gets solved in a fucking conversation with reasoning. No, and I don't mean like I say reasoning. I don't mean through deception, like a salesperson, but like, shit, that's a great idea. Stephen Covey, I say his name a lot, right? Habits of Highly Effective People. The last three habits. Is it the last three habits or last four habits? Think, win-win. Hold on. Think, win-win. No. Seek first to understand, then be understood. Think, win-win, then synergize. Yeah, the last three. It's like two people coming together with a conflict, and the conflict gets resolved, like the solution to the conflict ends up being a solution that works out for both. Not one where, oh, well, since I got all the muscles, then it's my way or the highway. It like, you know, I say that, but it's how do I practice? I guess I try to practice it. I do try to practice it. My problem is I've been doing it with all the wrong people. When they say think win-win, when Stephen Covey said, seek first to understand, then be understood, the caveat or the part that I missed was that only applies with people who share that mindset. There's some people, once you understand them, they're like, hey, well, we're done. I got my nut. Anyway, I'm just saying, I love this clip because the system's made by killers. I been feeling like I don't belong because, you know, it's like, and it's not that it's made by killers, but it's also killers who then pretend to make themselves out like saints. Like they create the illusion that we, like the way, I think about the way Canadian history was explained to me. They made it sound like, hey, we came to this country as settlers, and these fucking Native Americans kept bitching, holy shit, so we moved them all to Winnipeg. Basically, they skipped the detail about the genocide. It's like, you know, they, but they don't, see, I used to wonder whether, like, if we could sit white people down as a species, and I want to ask them, was it worth it? Was it worth it? Slavery, genocide, all this accomplishment, all this, see where you people positioned yourself in the world as top dog. Was it worth it? And I'm expecting white people, yeah, fuck yeah, man. It was either that or be at the bottom. What fuck? Be less than you niggers? Holy shit, being your slave? You know, it's this all. Let me try to get a thought here. I'm trying to get a thought out. Was it worth it? And the one thing that makes me question whether it was worth it is how white people lie to their children about how they managed to get to where they are. Or lie to their children about what exactly makes white children different from black children. No, it's not just skin color. It's, a lot of, like, you know, crimes against humanity committed against one group towards another one. It's like, hey, white kid, I'm not here because of bad karma. My parents didn't come to this country because Haitians didn't have their shit together. You know, anyways, a system made by killers. And my question is it possible to go from that system and to move to a system of empathizers? I'll be honest with you, because I can't preach. If I was a preacher, I'd be telling you, yes, but I can't see it. I want it, but I can't see it. And I guess this is where that Dr. King thing of the first step of 1,000 miles, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a first step. I don't even know what that first step is, except maybe, yeah. All right, next item. Oh, speaking of crooks, this one is labeled under Damn Killer Mike. Damn Killer Mike. Damn Killer Mike. Hold on. Is this it? No. Is this it? No. Let me go for my tab. All right. Okay. So, so on the last episode, I talked about DJ Envy and how he's associate, his partner, his business partner, Caesar Killer Mike. What's his name? Caesar something. Whatever, right? You better be into hip hop to understand. Anyway, his partner Caesar is facing, is he arrested or is he, but basically is been accused of Ponzi scheme, setting up a Ponzi scheme. Wait, what's this? Hold on a second. Yeah, set up a Ponzi scheme. Anyway, so there's a clip of Killer Mike. It's funny. The internet does not forget. There's a clip of Killer Mike. Here, I'm just going to play it, right? And Killer Mike basically, I thought this was a recent clip, but this was before, is Killer Mike endorsing Caesar's business. So I'm just going to play it. Here we go.
I have hijacked and kidnapped DJ Envy. Don't worry, he'll be back, but I'm with my man Caesar right now. I said, Caesar, you got to show me the gold mines that surround me. So I grew up here. We're on Martin Luther King. We're right in Adamsville. I grew up in these apartments doing some things that should have got my ass locked up forever, but now I'm here today learning how to invest. So Caesar, what we got?
28 unit building.
28.
Looks like a home run to me. 28 two bedrooms, townhouse style.
Yup.
We see opportunity down here.
See opportunity.
That's all we see.
And we're not gonna pay a lot of money for it.
Oh no, that's key. Under market value.
That's what I'm learning from him. Guys like Kenny, shout out, appreciate y'all. And I'm about to go ride around, look at some more shit. Yup.
I don't know if that's an endorsement or, but anyways. And then later on, Killer Mike, in a tweet that was later deleted, shout out to K. The Chemist for screen capturing this. Killer Mike writes, in a laughing emoji, a mutual friend told me I should meet with him, so I did. I did no business. I never endorsed him. And if you watch the video, I just looked at some shit he showed me and got up out of there. Excuse me. So, oh, shit. Oh, he's commenting on Kayla. All right, so do with it with what you will, but this is not the first time that I hear Killer Mike. Well, at least, okay, in this tweet, which for some reason he deleted, he said, hey, I wasn't endorsing this motherfucker. Someone told me he's about that business, so I figured I'd encourage him. After the fact. Like, I think the real reason I'm bringing this up is because this is, I've heard some stuff about Killer Mike, about how, one second he's about the community, but the next, maybe I should get the details before I start talking shit. But the image he's presented of I'm about the people doesn't seem to jive with the actual person. You know what? I'm not doing you guys a favor. I'm not doing you guys a service by saying this. This is like, I feel like I'm in the barbershop and I'm just, yeah, some person said blah, 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 whatever, right? But I'm just going to stick to this situation. Because I bring up the story because I was very disappointed in this headline about DJ Envy. Less, because I don't know DJ Envy, but I'm just, it breaks my mind. It breaks my heart. People who take advantage of poor people. Like his target audience, I could have been, like I remember in my 20s, I could have been one of those people just trying to be successful, trying to make a name out of myself because, you know, selling drugs wasn't going to work out for someone like me. And then, and I'm already a skeptic person, but if I, that one moment where I decide to trust someone and they play me, that's, you know what I hate? Exactly. It's people who take advantage of other people's trust. That's what it is. It's on my, it's more than pet peeves. It's like, it's a hanging offense for me, man. If I rule the world, yeah, you'd be hung. Yeah, it'll be hanging for that. All right. Okay. Last but not least. Not bad, B. Okay. I'm trying to be conservative with my time. There's a lot I could have shared with you, but I decided with this small group. Someone on, which is now my favorite subreddit, / HSP, highly sensitive people. The question goes, how do I stop being so sensitive towards people's energy? And, you know, this could probably be a final thoughts, but I have other things that I wanted to bring up with final thoughts, so I'm leaving it in using random thoughts. So, whatever. So, my answer to this one was, how do I stop being so sensitive to people's energy? For me, what I learned is once I finally made peace with the fact that I'm a highly sensitive person, once I stopped running from that shit, I realized that I needed to make some changes within myself. And one of them was being very selective about people I call friend. I think when I first started out, the born Christian, and part of me wanted to be like Jesus. And I thought, you know, love the world. Try to love the world like Jesus did. And I'm realizing that, yeah, I don't think Jesus loved everyone. I don't think it's possible. I think it's easier for me to believe in a man who walked on water than it is for me to believe in one human being loving everyone on earth. Have you met us? Yeah, I think that's bullshit. Okay. What I'm saying is, I needed to be more selective of people that I call friends. Now, I'm saying I dismiss friends. I'm saying make a distinction between associates and friends. Now, I have a shitload of associates. But friends, family, that's a very small number. And it's not just by blood. It's not, you're not family just because of blood, but it's also, I make a distinction between, are you an energy drainer or an energy contributor? So to answer this person's question, in my case, is you don't stop being sensitive to people's energy. You're just more selective about people's energy. There's a song called, let me get the title here. Is it Energy Budget? Energy Budget. I want to remember the name of the Energy Budget. Oh, fuck. Of course not. Song. There we go. By Tony Jones. And it's called Energy Budget. Maybe I should put that in there. And she gets it. And she's pretty much saying that, hey, yeah, I got to be very careful about who I share my energy, because some people, their only purpose in life is to drain other people. I can't explain it why, but all they do is drain other people's energy. A friend of mine used the term energy vampire. Is that what she called it? But yeah, man, some folks, they just, yeah. And I'm saying your associate should not have the same access to you as your friends. If you find yourself in a situation where someone is just draining your energy, then you cut them off or make them associates, or you limit, you know what I'm really talking about it's a long way just to say enforce setting boundaries and enforcing them. That's really what the bottom line is. Now, I used to have problems setting up boundaries because I grew up with the notion that part of being loving is putting down your boundaries. It's like you want someone to like you, get rid of your boundaries. I had no idea. I know. I can hear some of you sighing, being like, "You're crazy." I know, but what are you gonna do when you don't know any better? You don't do better. So that was the mindset that I worked with. Now I read this question, and the way I interpret it is, give me a reason to enforce boundaries. And the truth is, the people worthy of being in your life, the people worthy of being friends, they'll respect your boundaries. To them, your boundaries are what makes you. It's not an inconvenience. That's what I'm getting at. All right. Okay. All right, gang. I'm actually surprised myself. Oh, right. You know what? There's a story about, I'm not going to get into it, but it's in my other link session. But there's a story about Hamilton MPP Sarah Jama getting, you know, I'm just going to play it, right? I'm just going to play it. Yeah, the TikTok clip. Canadian politician kicked out of the party over Palestine support.
7 months after she was voted in, Sarah Jama is now out of the NDP party over her comments supporting Palestine. She's also officially been censured, which means that she can no longer speak or vote in the legislature. If you haven't been following this story, let me catch you up to speed. Basically, Sarah Jama was elected in a by-election in Hamilton in March 2023. She's been known for her activism. She was the executive director of the Disability Justice Network. She was vocally pro-Palestinian. On October 10th, 3 days after Hamas attacked Israel, she posted this statement. I encourage you to pause to read the entire thing, but the key thing to note is that she cites the UN Special Rapporteur, who considers the occupation of Palestine as apartheid, that the violence and retaliation is rooted in settler colonialism, and that she's calling for an immediate ceasefire and de-escalation. She ends by saying her heart goes out to everyone impacted by the ongoing violence. Critics started condemning her statement, including the Premier of Ontario, Doug Ford, who called on Sarah Jama.
Hold on a second. Fuck Doug Ford.
Here we go. To resign, saying she had a history of anti-Semitism and that she's publicly supporting the rape and murder of innocent Jewish people. Then her own party leader called on her to retract her statement, saying it doesn't reflect the party's position.
Wow.
And that it was not approved by caucus. She asked her to retract it and clearly state that she decries any violence against both Israelis and Palestinians, and that Hamas's terror attacks should be condemned unequivocally. They also call for a ceasefire and de-escalation. So Jama responds by updating her post, adding that she apologizes, particularly to her Jewish constituents, unequivocally condemns terrorism by Hamas, and that she stands by the position of her federal party. But she doesn't remove or retract her original statement. Now, the NDP was satisfied, but the Conservatives were not. And they introduced a motion to censure Jama in the legislature, which, if passed, meant she would no longer be able to speak or vote in the House. That motion was introduced last week to be debated and set to be voted on today, Monday. Around the same time, Jama announced that she's threatening to sue Ontario Premier Doug Ford for libel and reckless and malicious statements. Well, specifically, this part where he said she was publicly supporting the rape and murder of innocent Jewish people.
Oh.
Her party leader, the NDP party, didn't know she was doing this. Monday rolls around. Before the vote on the censure, Sarah Jama addressed the legislature. Here's what she said.
Since I made this statement, Israel has only escalated its assault on millions of Gazans. The Israeli Defense Forces have killed thousands of Palestinians, destroyed residential areas, and ordered the evacuation of at least 20 hospitals in northern Gaza.
Wow.
Israel is telling people who are already injured, sick, and dying in hospitals in Gaza to leave. Since I made my statement, Israel has bombed refugee camps, United Nations schools, hospitals, airports, and the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt. The unspeakable destruction continues and represents collective punishment against all Gazans in retaliation for attacks by Hamas. The Ford government has done nothing meaningful to say about these atrocities and has now targeted me to distract from its own scandals. Mm-hmm. And those of us committed to Palestinian life refuse to be distracted.
Right,
I restate my call for an immediate ceasefire by Israeli forces and for the immediate restoration of food, water, fuel, and electricity in Gaza. And I applaud the many elected officials in Canada who have joined this call in recent days, and I hope even more of you will speak out.
Moments after that speech, and just before the vote on her censure was about to happen, NDP leader Marit Stiles announced that they are kicking Sarah Jama out of the NDP party, saying that there's room for different viewpoints, even dissenting ones, but that the foundational principles are working together as a team, and that they had reached an agreement to work together in good faith that included no surprises. But since then, Sarah has taken a number of unilateral actions that undermined collective work and broken the trust of her colleagues. She added that some of Jama's actions contributed to an unsafe work environment for staff. It's worth mentioning that Jama herself has been the target of hateful attacks and death threats.
Of course.
Anyway, after this all happened Monday morning. The vote passed to censure Sarah Jama in the legislature.
The ayes are 63, the nays are 23. The ayes are 63, the nays are 23.
Cease fire now! Cease fire now! Cease fire now!
So Sarah Jama now officially sits as an independent, but because of this vote to censure her, she can no longer vote or even speak in the House.
Damn. You know, this is one of those stories that I kept seeing the headline, and it just, when I kept saving it to read later, so I just took the opportunity to focus, to learn about it now, but God damn it, NDP. I used to say NDP... They have all the right ideas, but for some reason, they can't win. They don't win. And, yeah, I guess NDP, y'all gonna have to decide, man. Are you politicians or are you about it? Because kicking her out was a political decision. You might as well join the liberals. you fucking hippies with a suit. But I guess I'm saying, man, go down with the ship. There's nothing. Look, I get it. Israel's on a warpath. To them, it's not about human life. It's all about statistics. It's we're at war. The winner gets to explain, tell the world. The winner gets rid of their enemies and gets to explain to the world why they were justified in doing what they did. They're not seeing atrocities. They're not seeing what we're looking at. Kids die. Oh my God. You know what? I'm going to play this heart-wrenching. Fuck that, man. This is when everyone talks about Israel defending themselves, this is what I hear. Okay. This is what I hear. I'm just going to play this clip. Little kids should not have these kind of questions. This is a hear what this 10-year-old Palestinian girl has to say.
What do you expect me to do? Fix it? I'm only 10. I can't even do anything to this war. I just want to be a doctor or anything to help my people, but I can't. I'm just a kid. I don't even know what to do. I get scared, but not really that much. I get...
You know what? Okay, with the... Because I get it. If you're a warmonger, you can't allow yourself to feel sympathy for the enemy. I understand all that shit. I get that, but the thing is, it's not just the killing of the children, it's the genocide that, fuck, man, you know what, again, this world, we live in a world designed by fucking sociopath and killers. Yeah, it makes me question hip hop because hip hop, like, no wonder hip hop is being, not hip hop as a whole, not just the culture, but I'm saying mainstream hip hop. I'm thinking about how Biggie pretty much related to the Strong Survive shit. Not to say Biggie was, okay, I'm confusing the point. I'm just saying ceasefire, man. I wish. Again, I'm being a dreamer. Okay, I'm gonna speak out for the people who can connect to what I'm saying. I wish we could live in a world. I wish, here's hoping for a future. I know it's not gonna be this generation, but I would like to hope for a future where people look back at war the same way we look back at slavery. Well, actually, that's bullshit because, sure, we might see slavery as inhumane, but slavery is more rampant now than it was before the Haitian Revolution, you know, before the Atlantic slave trade. You know, I'm starting to realize that I don't think I could get myself to be, okay, I'm going to end this news and random thoughts with this one here. Is this is more a reflection of myself, but I don't think I can get myself to believe, even though this is a podcast about growth, I have difficulty believing in people's ability to change. And what got me thinking about that is, if you're a fan of The Walking Dead, they have a character in there named Negan. And that nigga did some atrocious shit, right? In one of the seasons. He was a fictional character, and he did some atrocious shit that made me be like, whoa, don't fuck with Negan. Instilled fear in this human in me. 2 seasons later, they decide to, like, change him and make him a decent guy. But it's not the fact that he's a decent guy, but it's more of the fact that I feel like this is the first show that introduces the concept of redemption. Like, I am convinced, because it's a TV show, it's easy to believe, it's fictional, right? I am convinced that this character has changed and regrets his past action. And he is different from the person now than he is before. I do believe that. But if Negan was a real human being, poor guy. If he was on a path to redemption, I wouldn't believe him. It's like I can't get myself to believe in redemption. Now, does this mean that I can't get myself to believe in a better version of myself? Is that the same thing? Maybe. I'm thinking about it. Let me put it this way. One of the thoughts I have about being a white person and how I wouldn't make it as a white person, I wouldn't be able to handle that guilt. I'm not saying white people should feel guilty. That's not my point. I'm saying I'd be one of those white people who, from what I can tell, white people, when they finally learn about their history, or how they got to where they are, some of them will handle it well and some will handle it like, okay, all right, now I see my purpose on this earth is to be better than my ancestors. I think I'd be one of those people who'd be like, doing some cringing shit. But my point is, how did I get to this point? Yeah, I think I have difficulty believing in redemption. Even though I'm fascinated by the concept of, like, can people change? I guess the answer is yes, but can I get myself to believe that people change? And that includes myself. It's wild. I know. This is kind of weird. This whole podcast is supposed to be about growth. And here I am telling you that I have difficulty in believing that people can change. With that said, this concludes News and Random Thoughts. Let's jump to final thoughts and I'll let you get the fuck out of here. All right, let's go. All right, final stretch. You know, I forgot why I was making the... It doesn't matter. Can people change? All right, okay. First clip is... Okay, this one broke my heart. And it goes under... I hate people. Okay, hold on. Before I do this, let me fix my show notes. Before, you know, y'all got any good jokes to share? Sorry, I'm just clearing my... Yeah, all right, okay. I'm just adding, taking... Yeah. Yo, check out the other... in the show notes for this episode, there's a section at the bottom called Other Links. And that clip of the kid, the Palestinian kid, going, "What do you want me to do?" Is in there. And but I also have three comedy sections. Three things I put in for comedy. Yeah. All right. Okay. Okay. Now that I've organized my show notes, this clip, it's called a post. Oh, is this a, or it can't be played, all right? So it's not a video, but the post goes, it's a post where a woman is accepting her body. That's the whole, okay, accepting her body. And on the internet, she does that. Good for her. She's the strong one in this one. She's the amazing human being doing that, because her accepting her body inspires other people to do the same. And, of course, the people who this video wasn't targeted for, the immature, a lot of boys attacked her for it. And hey, I'm going to read the caption. It says, a post where a woman is accepting her body, the boys, in practice, and some girls, fuck, are hating on her for being on social media and being flat and hair, legs, hair, and talking about her baby, even if she's not a mother. Anyway, yeah, I mean, you know, I guess all of this to say that, yo, power to her. Here's hoping your fans, are louder than the haters. Because you know what? This reminds me of, oh, by the way, okay, I guess a little winning. I celebrate my wins on this podcast. Hold on, what do I use to celebrate my wins? Yay! Yeah, what's my win? Is I finally drafted a version of the email I want to send to the Black Fat Fam podcast. And in a way, I'm thanking them for doing what they do. But I elaborate. And it took me a while. I finally was able to... Man, this was a difficult email to write. But I was able to hammer out how... What I appreciate about their podcast is it inspires me to do this podcast. It inspires me to continue on this trip of being my more authentic self. You know what I just... While writing that email, I realized two things. One is... First thing is how all my example of being your real self were bullshit. Like, I was surrounded by rappers or wannabe rappers who would say shit like keep it real. And the one thing they didn't do was keep it real. Two, while writing the email to BFF, is realizing that, so there's a part where I explain how even though I'm 6 feet, 300-pound, gruesome black man. Like, by white people standards, I'm scary. Despite having that, I spent the majority of my life failing to meet the standard of what it means to be a real man. Real man as in the archaic, you know? It's like muscular, bad bitch by his arm, and money. And, you know, and respect from others. Like, I failed on all those three criteria. And it had me thinking about how I ended up hating dating because I had this bad habit. I mean, I didn't know better, so I didn't do better. I would date women who expected me to live up to the definition of a quote-unquote real man. Again, didn't know better. I didn't know shit about compatibility. And then the breakup would happen when they would be like, "Oh, man." when I wouldn't meet that standard. And I remember it was driving me nuts, because I remember feeling like, okay, all dating is finding out shit about myself that I didn't want to know. And now I'm realizing, while I wrote that email, I realized that I've been going after all the wrong women. Like, I guess I'm in the category of human beings that if you date, you got to date someone who understands you. It's like that line by Nas. It goes, I got no game. That's what hit me. I got no game. Some girls just understand my story. Yeah, I guess I'm in the category of human beings that, yeah, you got to date someone who, or you got to be with someone who understands your story and appreciates your story. Anyway, yeah, shout out to, oh my God, okay. All right. Because this is not, okay, I'm off track, guys. But, you know, it's my podcast, my goddamn podcast. All right, I'm off topic. This concludes what I wanted to say about the sister out there who posted a video of self-acceptance. Good for her. And middle fingers to the haters. But this is really what I wanted to talk about. This week, I had the pleasure of attending a comedy show. The last comedy show I was at was the homie H. S. Dot. Is that his name? Yeah, H. S. Fuck. What's his real name? H. Dot. S. Dot. That is, that doesn't help. Just a second. Doesn't matter. I was at his show, and homeboy was trying to get into some deep shit. And what happened is, basically, someone in the audience fucked it up for me, man. These white girls were in the background talking that, I'm sure they, this was before the convoy, but they were saying, like, some racist Canadian shit. My homie was on stage trying to make a point about Canadians, and one of them just spits out, well, the real problem with Canada is we don't look out for our own, or some shit, like, whatever. All I know is I was already in a bad state as a human being. And basically I was in a sensitive state, the kind of sensitive state where you should not be at a comedy club. Like, it's funny. Sometimes it's not the person on stage you got to worry about. Sometimes it's the motherfucker at the show you got to worry about. Anyways, fast forward to, my point I was trying to make is, yeah, since lockdown, I hadn't been at a comedy show except for that one. And, I was at another one where I presented it. Yeah, it went well, but I remember being, but doesn't matter, right? What I'm getting at is I saw Nimesh Patel on stage, and homeboy, that show reminded me of the joys of being in a comedy show. It's not just a comedian or comedians. What was the name of his opening act again? I gotta remember. Oh, Hassan Phillis. Yes. It's funny how it's not on the Hassan Phillis. Make sure I got his name properly. Half Jamaican, half Djibouti comedian from Vancouver. I didn't know shit about him, man. But yo, this dude was fucking hilarious. Anyway, whatever. Okay. It's not just the comedians that make the show. It's also the audience. I forgot. I'm in final thoughts here. Okay, so where I'm going with this, first I'm trying to say how I had a great time at a show. Shout out to everyone. Shout out to the comedians. Shout out to Nimesh. Shout out to Hassan Phillis. And shout out to the audience. Shout out to his fans, because they made the show amazing. I had a great time. Oh, and shout out to my homie for hooking me up with the tickets. And you know what's funny? I still remember agreeing to go to the show, and then it was dark and it was raining, and being like, fuck, regretting saying I wanted to go to the show, and being like, yo, these motherfuckers better be good. And these motherfuckers better appreciate the fucking fact that I could be at home watching Law & Order in my pajamas. I gotta wear pants. I gotta make myself presentable. Anyways, I remember driving there. Now, granted, this was at Algonquin College, and the seats weren't that comfortable. That's not the point, right? But again, the audience made up for it, and the audience and the performers. But I remember going up there, and the question came up of, is there going to be an opening act? And I remember the guy sitting beside me, he was talking to his girlfriend. He said, yeah, it's got to be an opening act. There's no way he's going to show up to a cold audience like that. I'm like, I felt like saying, damn, are you a comedian? How do you know that? Anyway, I mean, that's very technical on your part. And I said he had a good point. So I started reflecting on who's the poor sap who's going to be the opening act. I remember the first time the concept of an opening act. It must have been when I went to see Ice Cube. No, Ice-T, long time. I think my first concert was Ice-T, and there was an opening night. I'm like, fuck! I'm like, I didn't come to see you, asshole! But comedy is different. I was like, who's the poor soul that's going to open up for this guy? Because he's got his work ahead of him. And that's the thing, part of being... It's interesting. Part of being the opening act, part of being the opener is to warm up the crowd. It's not an easy job. Also to be a sacrificial lamb. Man, I've opened up for it's happened to me once that I've opened up to a cold crowd and that shit was a disaster. Didn't bother warming up the crowd. But that's not the point. The point is, this is a long-ass setup just because I realized what the point is, and I'm about to link it to what's up with the title. My point is, I remember when the show finally started, got the applause, and this dude I didn't recognize with, like, I'm trying to describe his hair, whatever. Didn't know who he was from No Name, and just fake jogging to the microphone. And he was chill about it, right? So he was the opening act. My mind was on him because, oh, I forgot to mention that part of the reasons why I went, part of my hopes into going to the show was that not only I was going to enjoy myself, but also spark that part of me that wanted to do comedy. So my eye was on the opening act. And homeboy started out and he was really chill. Like, my style of comedy is like very energetic, right? Or I talk loud, but whatever, right? But that dude is very chill, and it's like if comedy was being a clown, right? So my style is like I'm the clown wearing the costume and everything, and he's the guy not wearing the makeup or anything like that. So he's just going on straight wit and whatever and all that, right? And whatever, but the thing is, he was fucking hilarious. He killed it. That's my point. He killed it. Yeah, man. Oh, no. He did more than, like, yeah, foreplay to the max. If the comedy show's like sex, yeah, man. The audience dick was hard. That was a terrible analogy. But my point is, he killed it. Now, you would think that'd be inspiring. No, instead, that shit depressed the fuck out of me. The whole time I'm looking, every laughter, I couldn't stop thinking about, I can't do that. I wouldn't be able to do that. I would have fucked that up. Oh my God. Oh my. I kept down. Every time he did well, I kept beating myself up. You can't do that shit. You'd fuck that shit up. I was thinking, how does he go from, I think the point that I'm trying to get at, right, from him walking to that microphone, doing his set, killing it, and then, all right, you guys ready to get the show started? All right, please come to the stage, Nimesh. Yeah? Okay, Nimesh did well, of course. Okay, but my point is, again, focus on the opening act because again, me as an open micer, I can compare myself to, okay, one day I'm going to do enough open mics to do what he does. But the thing is, even when I was doing comedy, I had no confidence of self. This is what I'm trying to get at. And... And that's what's up with today's title. Ask for better cards. I think I spent my entire life wishing, looking at my cards and hating them. Hating my cards. The cards that I was dealt with. And what I mean by that, anything about me. Believing that I was cursed. Believing that nothing about me is good. Anything I create, it's what makes it tough is I'm a creative person. So anything that I create, like, I had no self-confidence, zero self-confidence. And I'm wondering what it must be like to be the kind of person who gets the cards that they were dealt with at the beginning of life and make that shit and believe in it. Say, I can make this shit work. I grew up believing you weren't allowed to. Now, I'm going to blame Christianity. You know, I'm going to blame my Christian upbringing because they ingrained this notion that everything about you sucks. You fucked up. You're a product of sin. You lucky. God sent his only son to die, you know, to suffer and die and get his ass whooped on a cross and bleed for your punk bitch ass. Cause you ain't shit. Like, to me, that was the core tenet of Christianity. You ain't shit, but God forgives you. So everything about me was wrong. And it's to a point where I don't think I understood the concept of confidence. Like when LL Cool J did the song, I'm Bad, I thought that was confidence. No, that was bragging. Okay, sorry. Let me get back to what I was saying is. I remember asking him, I was gonna ask a homeboy after the show. I did after the show. I took a picture with both comedians, right? But I felt like asking, excuse me, I did ask Hassan, how did he get on the tour? Like, I thought he was going to say, but grinding all my life. Grinding, I mean, I'm sure he's been grinding, right? But it turns out that he's been grinding, but what helps too is that he's friends with Nimesh, and Nimesh just like, that's what happens, right? Sometimes if you get a comedian who's more successful, gains more success in the comedy career, and they like you, so they'll have you as their opening act. That's how it goes in the comedy community. And he so deserved it. Like I said, so deserved it. Nothing was given to him. Like this is, he wasn't the hot comedian who sucked and who just got the job because they were hot. But yeah, I remember asking him that. But deep down, what I was trying to say is, wow, how could a loser, it's a good thing that I didn't elaborate, but I nearly said, how could a loser like me get to where you are? And I'm realizing, in that moment, I'm realizing, well, step one is you need to believe in your own shit. Because I still remember, I've actually done stages. Okay, I don't think I've ever presented in front of 600 people. But I've been in that kind of stadium. I have made a room packed, especially during Black History Month, packed with people laugh, and not just because they knew me. I have gotten compliments from other comics and all that. But despite all that, despite a good show, I would still leave there going, dude, you just got lucky. Next show is gonna suck. And then it's going to suck. Then the one after that's going to suck. And then finally, you'll talk yourself out of doing comedy. Like, even though I was on stage living my best life, I still had zero confidence in my ability. And while trying to figure out a title for this episode, I knew it was going to be about confidence. But I remember Jay-Z had a line in his Justify My Thugs where he talks about, I just play the hand I'm dealt, I can't say I've never knelt, I like that, before God and ask for better cards at times to no avail. Like, yes. It's interesting, Jay-Z said that, yo, there's been times that I wish I was a different person. And, yeah, no, I could relate to that. I remember wanting to be anyone but me. It's interesting, it's so weird. There's people around me who are like wishing they could have what I have. And I'm like spending my time wishing not be. All I'm saying is, what I'm trying to get at is I'm working on. This is my work in progress right now. I have no idea what confidence looks like. But yesterday, while high and listening to Ultralight Beam by Kanye, and I'm realizing that in this song, he's pretty much saying, or the way I interpret it is, his confidence comes from the belief that his God runs the universe, and he sent and he put him on Earth to do what he's doing now. So I can imagine where that confidence comes from. Now, I tried using God to gain some confidence, but it was fake confidence. But I'm considering the possibility that maybe I'm working on it. Maybe I have been a confident person. I just expressed it differently. Like, part of being confident is not, you're not 24/7 confident. I spend more time feeling unconfident than I do feel confident. Like right now, I'm not, you know, maybe part of being confident is accepting the times where you're like, shit, I don't know. But I just need to tweak it better. Like, I think about the fact that I haven't given up on life yet. And trust me, I've been wanting to. I think about the fact that I convinced myself to go into therapy. I don't know. I feel like maybe there's a part of me that's like, yo, we could do this. You just need a little help. Let me just try to find you someone. The fact that I haven't given up must say that there's some kind of confidence in there. I have to say that it goes, the only thing I'm confident about in this world is that there's nothing to be confident about. Anyways, okay. So I'm saying, as much as I enjoyed the Nimesh Patel concert, but I really liked that moment when Hassan walked to that microphone and did his thing. Now, I don't know what his mindset is like, whether he's one of those people who are like, you know, faking confidence, or maybe he believes in his shit. But I just know that no one in the world can help me figure this out. The thing I gotta figure out for myself is no one can give me confidence. I gotta develop it for myself. Am I preaching? Then it's not my intention to preach. I'm really thinking out loud. I just had a moment where I realized, yeah, I don't think confidence comes out of a jar. You gotta like figure that shit out for yourself. Which now concludes final thoughts. That's all I wanted to say for final thoughts. How much I enjoyed the Nimesh Patel show. Yeah, Nimesh Patel show and his opening act and his audience. And the life lesson I got from that moment. With that said, this concludes today's episode of Shut Up Podcast. Like always, check out my show notes because in addition to the links that I have that I brought up during the show, there's other links that you should check out, especially the last three, right? It's just give you a chuckle. They gave me a chuckle, and I'm hoping to give you a chuckle, all right? Like I said, this concludes today's episode. If you want to holler at me on, you can find me on Twitter, at bblizak or at Shut Up Podcast. On TikTok at b.black, but find me at home, my home site, my home turf, which is shutuppodcast.com, which is why I call myself Mr. shutuppodcast.com, all right? shutuppodcast.com, email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. You can subscribe to this podcast using the RSS feed that's on the website, shutuppodcast.com, or go to Google, Apple, and Amazon Podcasts. Yo, seriously, man, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcast. Peace in the Middle East. Peace. Peace in the Middle East. Peace. I said peace, right?
I am your king now.